Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dorothy Gundy, Anna Mateo, and Katie Weaver. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Dorothy Gundy.
An American law that blocks placement of Native American children with non-Native American families was ruled illegal earlier this month. A federal judge in Texas announced the decision, surprising many Native groups. The judge said the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, of 1978 is unfair. He said it gives Native Americans seeking to adopt children favorable treatment based on race. He said that violates the Equal Protection Guarantee in the U.S. Constitution. Most tribes see the ruling as a continuation of years of culturally destructive U.S. government policies. Children are responsible for continuing the cultures and traditions of their tribes. So, they argue, Native children need to remain in Native homes. Iva Johnson is a member of the Navajo Nation. She was living in Arizona in 2015 when she had a heart attack at her home. After waking up days later, two women she did not recognize were sitting nearby. They explained that they were with the Department of Child Safety. They said they were removing three of her four children from their home because there was no one to care for them. Johnson was too sick to speak. She wanted to tell them that her oldest child is 21 years old and able to care for the three children. Before she could speak, the women forced her to sign a document that gave her three younger children up for adoption. It took 3 years of court action before Johnson was reunited with her children. They had been separated from each other and spent time in different non-Native homes. Congress passed ICWA 40 years ago in order to prevent such events. At that time, as many as one-third of all Native American children had been taken from their families and placed in non-Native homes. Stephen Pivar is a lawyer for the American Civil Liberties Union. He explains how ICWA works. Before you can place an Indian child in a non-Indian home, you have to first look for another member of the immediate family, then another member of the tribe, then another Indian family, before you can place that child in a non-Indian home. Johnson says that the DCS in Arizona failed to follow the law. DCS officials did not answer VOA's request for comment. Today, Johnson, like many Native Americans, worries that such court rulings could cause many more Native families to lose their children. social isolation, poverty, and poor health care services on many Native American reservations have added to the rise in rates of alcohol and drug abuse and crime related to such problems. A 2014 examination of child removal cases in Pennington County, South Dakota, showed that alcohol abuse was involved in more than half of the removals. Violence in the home was noted in 22% of cases. Child abuse was given as a reason in 9% of all cases. Children who are removed from their homes and placed with strangers suffer higher rates of mental health problems, including drug and alcohol dependency. Parents who lose their children suffer loss, guilt, and shame. And it's even worse when you place somebody in a different culture, which is usually what happens to Indian children, said ACLU lawyer Pivar. Jace Rowe is 41 years old. He agrees. He was born on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in Montana, but taken from his mother when he was a baby. At first, he lived with a relative in Minnesota. He was later sent to a non-native home. Everything was different there, he said. They didn't understand my culture or where I was coming from. They didn't understand the humor that goes along with my culture or the way we interact with each other. One of the only minority students in school, Rose said he was always treated badly. I grew up ashamed of who I was, ashamed of being Native, he said. I wished I was white. Rowe became dependent on alcohol and other drugs at an early age. It took him many years to break free of them. It took a lot of work, he said, and I'm still in therapy. Rowe said he believes placing Native children in non-Native homes does more harm than good. It doesn't give them a sense of who they are, he said. The U.S. Department of the Interior is against ending ICWA. They say groups that support children's rights consider it to be the best example of children's interest policies. Pivar said he is not worried about attacks on the law. He said, there have been challenges to ICWA from day one. Yet, he thinks the law will stay. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
United States health officials say an estimated 80,000 people died of influenza and problems resulting from the flu last winter. The director for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported the number to the Associated Press. It represents the largest number of flu deaths nationwide in at least 40 years. Health experts were expecting the winter of 2017 to 2018 to be a bad year for flu deaths, but not that bad. Dr. William Schaffner is an expert on vaccines. He works at Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. Schaffner noted that 80,000 deaths is nearly two times as much as what health officials once considered a bad year. CDC officials say that between 12,000 and 56,000 Americans die every year from flu-related causes. While 80,000 deaths seems high, the exact number could be even higher. CDC officials do not have an exact count of how many people die from the flu each year. Influenza is a relatively common disease, and not all flu cases are reported. Also, flu is not always listed on death records as the official cause of death. For that reason, the CDC must estimate the number of dead based on statistical models. While last winter was a bad flu season in the U.S., it was not the worst. The 1918 flu pandemic lasted nearly 2 years. Historians estimate that the disease was to blame for between 500,000 to 700,000 deaths during that period. The exact number is still not known. One thing that made the 2017-2018 flu season so bad was that the strain of the flu virus was strong. Usually, the disease kills the very young, the very old, or those who are already sick. However, last winter, the flu killed many healthy Americans. Another thing that made the flu season so deadly was that the flu vaccine was not as effective as experts had predicted. In a 2017 statement to the press, the World Health Organization said that every year, up to 650,000 deaths are connected with influenza or influenza-related illnesses. This is a new estimate by the U.S. CDC, the WHO, and global health partners. This is more than the global estimate from 10 years ago. At that time, experts estimated that between 250,000 to 500,000 people died from influenza or influenza-related illnesses. Back in the U.S., health officials are predicting a weaker strain of flu virus this coming winter. Drug makers have made changes to the vaccine. Even though the vaccine did not work well last year, health experts still strongly suggest getting vaccinated. I'm Ana Mateo.
Each year, millions of people visit the 4,570-meter-high Baishui Glacier in southern China. Scientists say it is one of the world's fastest melting glaciers. The huge body of ice is in the southeastern edge of a Central Asian region called the Third Pole. It is about 4.5 million square kilometers in area and holds the world's third largest collection of ice after Antarctica and Greenland. Third Pole glaciers are critical to billions of people from Vietnam to Afghanistan. Seasonal glacier melts feed Asia's 10 largest rivers, including the Yangtze, Yellow, Mekong, and Ganges. Ashley Johnson is an energy, trade, and economics expert at the National Bureau of Asian Research, based in the United States. She says the Third Pole is one of the world's largest sources of fresh drinking water. She says an increase in melting from climate change may put that at risk. Johnson said, depending on how it melts, a lot of the fresh water will be leaving the region for the ocean, which will have severe impacts on water and food security.
Earth is 1 degree centigrade hotter today than in pre-industrial times. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change recently reported that that rise is enough to melt 28 to 44% of glaciers worldwide, and temperatures are expected to keep rising. Bai Shui is about as close to the equator as Tampa, Florida. And the effects from climate change are already extreme. A report this year in the Journal of Geophysical Research showed that the glacier has lost 60% of its mass. Since 1982, it has shrunk by 250 meters. In 2015, scientists found that 82% of glaciers studied in China had decreased in size. They warned that the effects of glacier melting on water resources are becoming increasingly serious for China. Jana Nyman is an energy security expert at the University of Sheffield in England. She said, China has always had a fresh water supply problem, with 20% of the world's population, but only 7% of its fresh water. That's heightened by the impact of climate change, she added.
For years, scientists have observed global warming change Jade Dragon Snow Mountain in the Chinese province of Yunnan. One research team has recorded Bai Shui's decrease at about 27 meters per year over the last 10 years. Wang Shijin is a glacier expert and director of the Yulong Snow Mountain Glacial and Environmental Observation Research Station. The station is part of a group of stations run by the Chinese Academy of Sciences. Wang notes that flowers have rooted and grow in the area once covered with ice. The research station that houses Wang and his team is outside Lijiang, a city of about 1.2 million people. The team uses special equipment to collect data on temperature, wind speed, and rainfall. Other devices measure water flow in streams fed by melted ice. Cold temperatures, heavy rain, falling rocks, strong winds, and glacier movement can damage the equipment. One recent morning, the team had to replace a broken weather research station.
However, the difficult weather conditions will ensure Yunnan has plenty of fresh water. In other areas, glacier loss creates serious risk of a dry period across the Third Pole, Wang said. The next day, the team had to wear special ice climbing footwear while repairing other research devices on the glacier. Wang spoke of how the area had changed. He said, "Where we're at right now was back in 2008 all covered with ice. From here to there at the side, the glacier shrank about 20 to 30 meters. The team crossed streams and jumped across deep, narrow divides in the glacier. They were looking for some measuring equipment they had placed in the ice earlier. The equipment shows how much the glacier has moved and the amount it dropped in height over the summer. One team member launched a camera drone over the third pole. The images it captured help tell a story of extreme loss. 25% of its ice and 4 of its 19 glaciers have disappeared since 1957. Wang said such changes to the Baishui Glacier provide the chance to educate visitors about global warming.
Last year, Yulong Snow Mountain Park officials reported that 2.6 million visitors came to the mountain. On a recent windy day, hundreds of visitors climbed wooden stairs to take pictures in front of the glacier. One visitor, named Ho Yu Gong, said he was not too concerned about climate change and Baishui's melting. "I don't think about it now because it still has a long way to go," he said.
To protect the glacier, officials have limited the number of visitors to 10,000 a day and have banned hiking on the ice. China plans to create snow there and block streams to increase the amount of water in the air, which slows melting. Security guard Yang Xiaofeng is a member of the local Naxi minority community. It considers Jade Dragon Snow Mountain to be sacred. Yang says he remembers being able to see the glacier's lowest edge from his home village. But that time has passed.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was related to an earlier president with the same last name, Theodore Roosevelt. Many Americans call Franklin Roosevelt by the first letter of each word in his full name, FDR. When FDR took office, the United States was in a severe economic depression. The previous president, Herbert Hoover, had tried to improve the economy, but his efforts had failed. FDR defeated Hoover in the election of 1932. He won, in part, by promising what he called a New Deal for Americans. Voters did not know what FDR's New Deal meant exactly, but many liked his message of hope. Voters also did not know how much FDR would change the country. He remained in office for 12 years, the longest of any U.S. president, and led the country through the Great Depression and most of World War II. Along the way, he changed the way government affected Americans' lives and the job of the U.S. president. Franklin Roosevelt was born on a large estate in New York, about 140 kilometers outside New York City. He was the only child of wealthy parents. His mother and father made sure he had an excellent education. As a young man, he attended a private high school and then Harvard College in Massachusetts. He also studied law at Columbia University in New York. Young FDR was not an excellent student, however. He was interested in many things outside the classroom, including politics and girls. Two of FDR's interests came together in a young woman named Anna Eleanor Roosevelt, who went by the name Eleanor. She was the niece of a politician FDR greatly respected, President Theodore Roosevelt. On the day when Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt were married, Theodore Roosevelt attended the ceremony. In fact, he walked with his niece in front of the guests to her future husband. Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt went on to have 6 children, although one died as a baby. While Eleanor Roosevelt raised the children, Franklin Roosevelt directed his attention to politics. He left a job in a law office to serve in the New York State Senate. In time, he was offered a job in the federal government as an assistant secretary of the Navy. FDR enjoyed the job, but he continued seeking other political positions. He tried unsuccessfully for a seat in the U.S. Senate, but did get nominated by the Democratic Party to be its vice presidential candidate in 1920. Although he and his partner lost the race, FDR seemed like he was in a good position for major political success. But then, something unexpected happened. When he was 39 years old, FDR suffered major health problems. One day he started to feel a pain in his back. The following day, his legs grew tired. Then his skin became sensitive. By the end of the week, both his legs were paralyzed. He could not move from the waist down. He remained paralyzed for the rest of his life. The next years were difficult for the Roosevelts. Eleanor and the children helped care for FDR, and he worked hard to recover some of his strength and physical abilities, especially by exercising. While he remained hopeful about his condition, FDR worried about his political career. He did not think the public would accept a leader who could not even walk by himself. So he took several measures. He created a small wheelchair that would not get too much attention. It was made from a dining room chair, with wheels instead of legs. He refused to let photographers take pictures of him being carried or struggling to move, and he found a way to appear as if he were walking. He used a cane or the arm of a partner to balance, and then he swung his hips to make his legs move forward. Using this method, FDR walked to the stage at the 1924 Democratic National Convention. He used the event to nominate the governor of New York for president. That man's bid did not succeed, but FDR showed himself to still be an able politician. 4 years later, FDR himself was elected governor of New York. He held the position in the early years of the country's economic crisis. In 1932, FDR was a candidate for president. He took the unusual step of appearing in person at the Democratic Convention to accept his party's nomination. His campaign was such a success that the Democrats took not only the White House, but majorities in both the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives. The strength of the Democratic Party in Congress would help FDR become one of the most powerful presidents the country had ever seen.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.